Hello and welcome to WTM Insights, the official podcast of the World Travel Market London, the leading event for travel professionals. I'm your host, travel journalist Lisa Francesca Nand, bringing you the latest global trends, expert speakers and analysis within the travel and tourism industry. To start us off, let's have a look at some of the news stories that have been shaking up the travel industry this month. BA relaunches weekly flights to Pakistan after 10 years. There will be three flights a week using the Boeing 787 Dreamliner. The service was suspended more than a decade ago after a bombing of the Marriott Hotel in the Pakistan capital city killed more than 50 people and injured 250. Hopefully a symbol of the strong and growing relationship between the two countries. Boeing reports faulty parts on the wing of potentially 300 aircraft. A batch of leading-edge slat tracks were improperly manufactured and apparently could present signs of early wear due to the lack of heat treatment. Boeing has been calling operators to replace the parts with new ones before returning aircraft to service. The Foreign Office has moved the travel ban on flights from the UK to Sri Lanka, which is great news. On the 6th of June, the Foreign Office lifted their ban to travel to Sri Lanka, which was imposed after the terror attack at Easter. UK agents are rallying to re-promote Sri Lanka as the fantastic destination it is and encourage people to visit. ATO are holding a big event in central London on the 16th of July to support Sri Lankan travel as well. And Trump imposes travel ban on Cuba for US travellers. The travel ban was imposed on the 4th of June to prohibit US travellers from going to Cuba under previous group people-to-people travel authority. Cruise ships have had to scramble to change their newly adopted Havana itineraries. And that's the news for now. We're very lucky today to be joined by the founder and CEO of OutNow. OutNow is the world's leading global LGBT plus business development specialist and was established in 1992. OutNow's thought-leading network in better understanding and connecting with LGBT people as colleagues and customers has been described by independent industry commentators as the world's best. Often relied upon by leading global brands such as Barclays, Toyota, IBM for their professionalism and independence, OutNow is the industry leader in the LGBT plus tourism community and has made strides in growing the sector with an ethos of inclusivity and equality. And Ian, does that sound about right to you, that little summing up of what you do?
I would like to say my middle name should be Modest, because I'm not quite sure how I should answer when you've given me such a lovely introduction. Thank you. Yes, OutNow has for 28 years worked in trying to better understand and meet the needs of LGBT plus people as customers, as work colleagues, and just as members of society.
I don't know if it's because we've recently had Pride Month. There seems to be a surgence almost and growing acceptance around the LGBT plus community with brands. And I don't know, part of me thinks maybe this is a cynical thing, is that brands are sort of jumping on the opportunity to sell us more stuff. Or part of me wonders, is it authentic? What do you think's going on there?
It's a really good question. One of the disturbing parts about the word authenticity is how often you hear it from people who wish that they were. Authenticity is not something you can really just announce or fake. You know it when somebody is real. And what we see over the years, we would assess the state of play at the moment like this. There is everything to be thankful for in terms of the higher and higher and higher levels of visibility, particularly during Pride Month. We would be happier if we saw more support throughout the rest of the year. But the visibility is fantastic, and it is higher than we've ever seen, and it's wonderful. It does make younger LGBT plus people feel terrific and supported when they see that. On the downside, yes, it is correct. We know that we live in a capitalist society, and we know that businesses are looking for an edge or an advantage, which is perfectly fine. Everybody knows that and accepts that. But the question is support. So I spoke at the world's first, it was called the Pink Dollar Conference in Sydney in 1994. And I remember making my old slides on bits of plastic that you do at the photocopying thing for an overhead projector. And older listeners will remember those. But we made the slide and we were pioneering, and we didn't know quite how we should position this market. And we came up with two words which stay true today. One of them is recognition. And the rainbow symbols that we see in Pride Month are a clear sign of recognition by more and more businesses. It's terrific. So the recognition piece is well underway. But the second word we said in 94 holds true today, and that's support. We need to look at what you're doing as a business. How well do you understand the needs of this customer, and how well do you try to meet them? Because that's the support piece, which is essential to true success.
Well, Pride Month has been lovely. There's been flags everywhere. Even in the area I live in, Southeast London, you've got flags for the zebra crossings, which just looks beautiful and dramatic and is sending a wonderful message. But is there a danger that it's just a bit of a marketing ploy for now? You know, what happens for the rest of the year?
It's a really good point. LGBT plus people, they don't live a stereotypical life. They may choose to dress or act a certain way for one night of the year during Pride for a party, but during the other 364 days of the year, they exist. They still have concerns, needs. And if you're a business and you're serious about trying to be a genuine supplier to LGBT plus people, particularly in the travel industry, which is a high service sector, you need to be thinking of not just one month of the year. The other 11 months of the year are the most important part of what you could be doing. And if you're just focusing on Pride Month and rainbow flags because that's easier for you to comprehend, you are really missing out on being the winning business that could be meeting this market's needs.
And also from a very cynical point of view, it's prettier, isn't it, to have the rainbow flags rather than ordinary men and women going to work in their suits, looking after their children, looking after their, you know, just going about their business like people are for the rest of the year, rather than decked in rainbow flags and, you know, dancing with all sorts of fabulous outfits at Pride.
Yeah, I think Pride has a great function for visibility, and it has been the organisers of Pride are to be congratulated for the work they've done in raising LGBT plus visibility around the world. There are a whole bunch of different organisations, Sydney Gay, Lesbian, Mardi Gras and many, many others around the world. There is a difficulty even on Pride events, because what we see is that Pride organisers, like any person operating any organisation in society, they need cash to function. So corporations have cash, and corporations are very interested in the visibility that a Pride event offers. So they may well like to attach themselves to Pride events. And so you have perhaps a dissonance between the interests of the corporations who are looking for visibility and sales and goodwill. But there's a real problem. I wrote a piece with Rob Cover from University of Western Australia about this topic. And what we found when we researched it was that there was a growing dissonance from within the LGBT plus community about corporations using rainbow iconography or symbols simply to try to win goodwill absent of support. And we see it in London Pride Parade. In 2018, the London Pride Parade went for many, many hours and was filled with corporate floats. People were losing interest because it isn't that exciting to get excited for another bank or another accounting company that comes by. It's great for their staff. They put on a t-shirt with the logo and rainbow colours and they march along Regent Street. But the actual people, the LGBT plus community and the allies in the crowds were losing interest. It doesn't really connect.
Yeah, it's not as fun. I've seen those parades, you know, the banking parades and everything. The banking floats. And they're not nearly as fun. I do like the police people. In Brighton, we always have the police people and they look quite... And I really love the fact that they're embracing Pride because that sends home a real message, I think. But, you know, HSBC or banking, that's not so much. What about the Virgin Atlantic flight from London to Newark? I think it flew... On Virgin had a themed flight on the 28th of June run by LGBT members of the Virgin staff and special guests. And I don't know if I'm sure you saw it. I saw it in the press, all those fabulous pictures and videos. It looked like a lot of fun. Do you think it worked? Was it a good idea?
You can probably tell I'm a Libran because I can see the pluses and the minuses in how it unfolded. On the visibility side, it was fantastic. Certainly as a flight heading towards a major event, it was a major historical moment for the LGBT plus community. 28th of June 1969 was the day after Judy Garland was buried and the day after, the night before, when the police moved in to try and close down the Stonewall Inn. And there was a black trans woman. She wasn't having this on that particular evening. She literally fired the first shot at Stonewall. She threw a shot glass of her glass from her drink into a mirror and said no to the police. I am not coming with you yet again as you close down this bar. That started the Stonewall riots that were being commemorated in that Virgin Atlantic 50th anniversary flight. This is fantastic. I do worry that part of the reason for the flight, the significance to the LGBT plus community, the historical nature of that 50th anniversary was not as well communicated to the flying guests and perhaps also to the crewing that particular flight, who may not well have been as well informed about the historical significance as they could have been. I think there was a missed opportunity there for what could have been done in terms of content for that particular flight.
So all the frippery almost might be in danger of creating a one-dimensional stereotype that represents all LGBT travellers and therefore might alienate others?
Definitely. There was an example from just yesterday, actually. I was travelling from Paris to London and Eurostar were playing on the in-train, I want to say in-flight, but we were under the water, but the underwater video, the videos in the actual train carriages were showing a Eurostar Pride video. It was clearly a Pride video and there was sort of quirky text underneath and you could see what was being said and there was a drag queen or two and a couple of sly jokes. And I thought, this is progress, that's plus. But then when I went back and watched it with audio when I got off the train and I could hear the audio, it worried me because we made the first ever gay commercial for Qantas in 1996 in Australia. And I worry that we had more relevant direct creative connection in that particular piece than what we saw with the stereotyping, the one-dimensional. And drag is fabulous and it makes me smile. But there wasn't the final polish in the creative that we think you could have had. For example, could we not have shown a lesbian couple and their son coming back from a terrific trip to Disneyland Paris and heading back to London for Pride? This might well have connected with an audience in a way that doesn't take us only to obvious stereotypes, but shows that LGBT plus people, just like every other people, our corporate motto is LGBT spells people. And so if we just take ourselves out of rainbows and prides and think about people and then try to put LGBT people into the creative frame, I think we could see much, even greater success.
Well, marketers might think that the frippery and the rainbows and the glitter sells and creates more attention, attracts more attention than the everyday stuff. But I think they'd be wrong, because if you look at adverts on TV, for example, you've got all sorts of people doing everyday things, you know, making breakfast, going on their way to work, taking their kids somewhere. Just like you said, normal people doing everyday things. And it'd be nice to have that representation as well. And I'm sure marketeers are actually wrong. It's not all about, doesn't have to be about the flash and the party. It actually could be about those everyday activities.
But some people have done nice examples in the UK. Nationwide Building Society had a great ad where they were talking to a lesbian couple about their housing needs. We actually made the first ever gay banking ad in the world for Lloyds Bank back in 2010, leading up to the London Olympics, which they were a sponsor of. You can do some great work. Some of the keys are really, I always resolve from using the word authenticity because it's become so inauthentic when people use it. I would probably sway more towards honest representation or accurate representation, trying to get agencies are sometimes their own worst enemies, creative agencies, because you might get one or two people who could be lesbian or gay, and they may then dictate the conversation and everybody might decide we better defer to them. But if your one narrow worldview is all that you represent on the creative screen, that's not what 99.9% of the people necessarily experience every day. And so as a brand, what we do is we use data, we look at research, we try to find out where is this market, what do you need to understand about them, and how can you position your product to better connect with them? And that's especially true in travel, of course.
I did a bit of research recently for someone, helped them on a project called the Black Pound Report, assessing how much money the black community bring, you know, if you can generalise as a black community, which for the sake of the research they did, bring into business, and how much potential money they can spend on products that not necessarily being advertised to them. And I think it's a very similar thing, you know, from a marketeer's point of view, from a brand's point of view, if you're not ticking these boxes, and I mean that in a very, I don't mean you have to tick these boxes, you know, in a very, in a sales sort of sense, you know, brutally, then you're missing out on a lot of money. You know, you're not, everyone's not at the table. Everyone has to be at the table from an inclusion point of view, but also from a business point of view.
Yes. People in business, I think, are too conservative for where they should be. And I can say that confidently because I've done this for 28 years. And I used to be the youngest person in the meetings, and now the people I'm speaking with are often younger than me. But with that experience, what we've seen is that the fears that brands have about LGBT travel are usually almost always unfounded. What we're also seeing as a huge trend into the 2020s is that the allies community, these are the family members, the work colleagues and the friends of LGBT plus people, this group is now a vast majority in most of the key markets in which brands and travel businesses operate. And so you are actually likely to lose more business by not being seen to embrace this market. But the question is how you do it. So if your only knowledge is rainbows and Pride Month and that's all you understand, it's a shame because you're actually missing out on the other 11 months worth of business that you should be positioning your business for.
Word of mouth, I think, is one of the most influential marketing tools in the travel industry. A great experience for LGBT plus travellers will ensure that the message is passed on to their friends and their family and can have a massive reach outside the community as well. Good, bad experiences, they can translate to other potential customers and affect overall business, of course. There was the Brunei case study where anti-LGBT laws were passed in Brunei, meant protests and boycotts of the Sultan of Brunei's hotels across London, Europe and USA. What are your thoughts on the Brunei situation?
The Brunei case is a really good example of the power of allies. There were hotels around the world, Paris, London and elsewhere, in a luxury collection, the Dorchester Collection hotels. And these hotels have great people working in them. And many, perhaps most, of the employees in these hotels are genuinely supporters of LGBT plus people. So the Sultan within Brunei decided that a form of law would apply, which meant that LGBT plus people, particularly, I say that, but their real focus here is homosexuality, and they're looking for gay and lesbian people to be stoned to death as a penalty. This had been talked about some years ago, but then when it was actually attempted to be enacted, what we saw was a worldwide coming together against that action. And this was the power of allies. This was not just the LGBT plus community. This was the many, many millions of supporters who are what you could call allies of LGBT plus people globally. And they actually changed the conversation in a material manner. And that's the key point from that is that the LGBT plus community, in a way, become amplifiers for the good work that you do. If you can get a great piece of LGBT plus product through training and education such as learn.lgbt, if you can then communicate that effectively through great marketing and communications work, and the LGBT plus community get a great experience, they will come home happy and they will tell their family members, their work colleagues and their friends. And so they will amplify your good efforts, and this will bring you even more return on investment through doing a good job.
Makes absolute sense to me, and hopefully to everyone else as well. Yeah, talking about Virgin as we were earlier, it was recently in the news that they've said that stewards, male or female, don't have to wear makeup and can wear what they like, which is wonderful because in terms of makeup, obviously, they still have to wear the uniform. And I get that. I'm a big fan of new uniforms for these sort of situations. You don't want someone trotting around in jeans when you need to find them in emergency. But do you think that that's quite progressive, considering how much focus is put on the aesthetic of airline staff in that way? And is it valuable to the industry?
I think it's a brilliant initiative. We first saw this trend happening in, of all places, Sephora, the perfumier in Paris, where for some years now, both female and male employees, some will be with makeup, some without. This is a function of being who you are. And so the best thing you can do for your job and in your own life is try and feel who you're meant to be and feel and know you have the freedom to be that person. And my belief is that so long as in society we're not harming others with our choices, then a world in which people feel free to be who they would most like to become is a great world. And I think that's a brilliant initiative. It's a small initiative, but it's extremely powerful. And for members of all different kinds of parts of general society, all parts of communities. And we're all members of not just one community. We are all different pieces of diversity within each and every one of us. But I think a lot of people will feel well supported by an employer like that, that allows their employees to be themselves.
Yes, even if they don't want to go makeup free. I mean, as a woman, I adore makeup. I think it's great fun, but I'd love to go on a Virgin flight and see people in whatever they choose to put on their face, whether that's nothing, whether that's just a little bit of lip gloss and mascara, whether that's a guy with, you know, full on makeup. I'd love to find those people on a flight. I think it'd be fascinating. And, you know, it's just a greater representation of who we are in real life, which can only be a good thing. Now, the lovely thing is, is WTM and Out Now have 16 years of collaboration under our belt now. And the LGBT tourism sector has blossomed really in that time, particularly in the last decade, and is in turn feeding into the growth of the tourism industry globally. Out Now are bringing out easily accessible online training programs for businesses to educate themselves on how to provide a great experience for LGBT plus travellers. Why do you think this is important, and how will it impact the LGBT plus sector?
It's been something that's been on our radar for quite some time. It comes back to what we were discussing earlier, this idea of both recognition or visibility and support. So support of your customer. If you want to win brand loyalty, you should try and earn it. And in the LGBT plus sector, one of the key factors for people traveling is check-in, hotels, room service, restaurant staff, people in venue when you're staying in an accommodation. How comfortable do you perceive them to be with you being yourself? LGBT plus people don't look for any special treatment in this regard. What they're really wanting is what all the rest of society take for granted, which is just the chance to relax, be themselves on holiday, have a great stay, and go home with a lot of happy memories. Sometimes the little unexpected things are what make a holiday. So what we're doing, we've been working with clients such as Switzerland Tourism. We've been training a massive amount of hotels across all of Switzerland who are becoming certified in a program which will be showing at the World Travel Market's 40th anniversary show in 2019. This is certifying those properties who are trained in our Learn.LGBT training program, and we'll be announcing also that we're looking to make that far more widely available so that the tourism industry have access to these resources. It's the little things of do's and don'ts. What language should I use? How should I describe somebody's partner when I'm not quite sure of the actual relationship? What assumptions can I or should I make around check-in? And what sorts of things should I avoid topically or phrases that I should avoid? And this training has proved to be really invaluable in the places where we've been working on it. And so it's rolling out globally through Learn.LGBT, and How.LGBT is the certification program that we'll be announcing this year.
Do you think people, brands, companies sometimes feel a bit awkward in the way that they don't know how to deal with the community necessarily?
Yes, and it's not. It's different than it once was. When I started this business in 1992, when some of the listeners weren't alive yet, but it was a different world. And so the concern back then was far more around lack of knowledge, and possibly in some people's cases, perhaps LGBT phobia. They were genuinely afraid. And phobia doesn't necessarily mean hatred. But what we find is that when you provide education, when you give information, most of the people who take the Learn.LGBT training sessions, they report back to us and thank us. They say, thank you so much, because I now feel I have the skills and the information I need that I can now use to do a better job in meeting the needs of this particular group of customers. And the customer picks up on it. The way that you interact in venue is really what makes their holiday for them.
I think this is particularly important in travel, because often you're dealing with people. We see when we go to the WTM that we're there with people from all over the world, and it's wonderful. But actually, in some of these countries, gay people, lesbians are persecuted, even punishable by death. You know, it's actually very serious. This training is quite significant, not just to us in, you know, sort of liberal Europe and Western countries, but to other people as well.
Yes, we've had interest in the training, the Learn.LGBT training, from hoteliers in the United Arab Emirates, in Pakistan, places where it is extremely difficult to be openly gay, homosexual. There's an interesting fact, though, which is that most of the laws that exist relate to conduct, not to who a person is or who they fall in love with. So the laws relate to actual physical activity. And so, therefore, the idea of two people cohabitating in a room is not the same issue. Now, having said that, you're exactly right. There are some shocking penalties in the wrong places for LGBT plus people. But what we're finding is this provides an opportunity in certain markets for accommodations to become an oasis, if you will, for these people to feel safe to go and stay in that particular location.
And that's what I love about travel, is the fact that it opens people's eyes and hearts to communities they might not have necessarily mingled with, and you see after a while that, you know, actually we're just all the same.
We're working with a Swiss company into Africa at the moment, where there can be some very different, it's a real patchwork at the moment, Africa. There can be some quite hostile environments, including some of the death penalty countries. What we're finding, though, is information is the best solvent for awareness and acceptance and respect. Once people discover somebody that they know is LGBT plus themselves, it becomes personal, it doesn't become abstract, and it changes the world. So working slowly, surely, we've seen over a quarter century at Out Now doing this, we see that the world is changing in ways that have made lives better around the world for LGBT plus people.
Which can only be a very good thing. So just to wrap it up, WTM is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. We've seen a lot of change over the last 40 years in every industry, but especially in travel. What changes have you seen in the LGBT plus sector? And what do you think we can look at achieving over the next 40 years?
For me, it's a pivotal question. I'm 53 at the moment. And 40 years ago, I was 13 turning 14. I had just come to terms in my own life 40 years ago at the fact that I had realized I was gay. I understood it. I knew what it meant. And I knew that was my future. 40 years ago was the beginning of what was called gay-related immune deficiency, AIDS. AIDS and HIV, the advent of HIV, changed the course of LGBT rights from that period at the beginning of WTM right up until the mid-1990s, when a class of drugs called protease inhibitors came along and changed the narrative again. So from after we'd set up the business, everything changed in relation to corporate engagement with LGBT plus people. Gay people were seen a little more reticently during these years. Nobody was quite sure what was happening. It felt like being inside a war zone. For me, as a 20-something gay man in Sydney, it felt very scary. Thankfully, we lost too many people during that time, but we have a wonderful set of options now for LGBT plus people for visibility, being themselves, their health is protected and supported. Going forwards, I'll be 93, so whether I'm here, I'm not sure. We'll make a date for you and I. We'll come back and we'll talk in our nursing homes about how things went. What I see is, well, let's focus on the 2020s, because we have the 2020s upon us. We are in a great moment for LGBT plus business development for the travel sector. Where we think the travel sector can do good things is through education, such as we spoke of with the Learn.LGBT training and the certification in How.LGBT. So education, so that this focuses on product. Make your product as good as it possibly can be to meet the needs of this particular group of consumers. And think about your creative. How do you communicate with this group? And how do you then leverage that to have them become your ambassadors, to amplify your message through the 2020s into the millions and millions of family members, friends, and work colleagues who choose naturally to support the initiatives of businesses that do a good job supporting LGBT plus people.
Wise words, Ian, and thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our latest episode of WTM Insights. We'll be releasing exciting content throughout the year, so please subscribe to ensure you don't miss out. See you next time.